This is the Statman Sports Podcast, where we keep topics in context. This is your host, Steve Duffus, who is still wondering why the Seahawks didn't run the ball.
It's a beautiful day to talk sports, baby. Welcome to episode number 53 of the Statman Sports Podcast. This is your host, Steve Duffus. You know what time it is today, recording October 22nd, 2019, one day before the NBA season. And you know, of course, we're going to talk about the NBA, the new upcoming season. 10 teams, I call 8 to 10 teams that are arguably in a running to win an NBA championship, man. The NBA has not been as open for the past at least 5 years since the Golden State Warriors took over. So we know what the deal is. But before we get into all that, if you're tuning in here for the first time, thank you for tuning in. If you haven't subscribed yet, if a friend of yours shared this podcast with you, I want to thank you for showing all the support. For those of you who have been here since day one, again, thank you for the support. Thank you for all the encouraging words, because you know, I do this for fun, but I also do this for you guys because you guys want to be informed about everything that's been going on in the sports world. And of course, just like any other podcast, today we're going to focus on something that's quite important, which is, again, I said, the NBA season. And I'm sure you're ready to hear my opinion about this upcoming NBA season. So with no further ado, guys, let's get right into it with what are you talking about, bro, for the 2019-2020 NBA season.
Huh? What are you talking about, man?
What?
Bro, what are you talking about, man?
Ladies and gentlemen, a new NBA season is upon us, and of course we want to talk about some of the things we are looking forward to in these 2019 and 2020 NBA season. But before we get into that, there's something I need to lead you into. If you're listening here for the first time, this podcast is all about the statistics and how the statistics incorporate itself into this NBA season. And that is something I'm going to dive into and help you understand why this is important in this new upcoming NBA season. But one thing we need to make clear. Last season, the NBA lost its plot. The NBA was not what we expected it to be. And quite frankly, the NBA hasn't been itself for the last 5 years. And you know who we blame for that? The Golden State Warriors. We all went into the NBA season and we all knew practically who was going to win. So we weren't really interested in watching regular season games like we did in the past. But this year, I think that's going to change. Kevin Durant departed. We all know he went to the Brooklyn Nets. He joined his friend Kyrie Irving. In the NBA, all of a sudden, you can see about 8 to 10 teams have a legitimate shot to win an NBA championship. And what kept us busy, though, in the offseason or during the regular season was social media. All the players doing on social media, everybody had an opinion. Somebody has a rant. Somebody had beef with their team. Somebody had beef with their teammates, with their coaches. And that's what kept us NBA fans engaged in this past NBA season until the NBA Finals, when Kevin Durant got injured and we all thought, okay, wait a minute, the Toronto Raptors actually have a shot at winning this championship. And then Klay Thompson got hurt in game two. So we all knew, oh my goodness, this is really a shot. And ultimately, we know the Toronto Raptors end up winning the NBA championship. And that was really the only time where there was some slight excitement on the basketball court, where we said, man, I enjoy watching the game. And even then, you can put an asterisk next to that. Because of course, Kevin Durant didn't play that entire series. Klay Thompson played hobbled. The Golden State Warriors were just on the tail end of one of the greatest dynasties that we have ever seen. So with all that said, I compiled 20 questions that I gathered from over the internet and things that I put together in order for us to get an overview or to look into the future for the new upcoming NBA season. So I'm going to start off in order. I'm going to go from 20 all the way to 1, the burning questions that I have for this upcoming season. And of course, it's going to tie in with some statistics. So let's start with question number 20. Will we get the best offense and the worst defense ever again in the same NBA season? Some of you are wondering, how does this question come about? Two teams made history last season on opposite ends of the floor. The Golden State Warriors had the most efficient regular season offense since Basketball Reference began tracking stats from 1973 to 1974. And the Cleveland Cavaliers shattered the previous records for defensive futility, man. The Cleveland was just so bad and Golden State was just so good that the discrepancy was just amazing. With the three-point shooting revolution showing no sign of slowing down, will these records even last a full year? That's a question within my first question. And I think my guess is offensive mark stays intact, but defensive ones falls again. I would say between the Cavaliers, the Wizards, the Hawks, the Suns, the Knicks, and the Grizzlies, someone will do worse than the Cavaliers did last year. And so that is something that we should take into account and something that should intrigue you into looking as to what's going to happen this upcoming NBA season. Question number 19. How many more rebounds will Steven Adams get without Russell Westbrook actually stealing that from them? Some of you listening to this might be chuckling and laughing. But hey, that's true, man. That is absolutely true. While I was taking notes for this, I thought to myself, man, Russell Westbrook did steal a lot of rebounds from Steven Adams. And I'm going to make a prediction this year. All those rebounds that Russell Westbrook took away, I think Steven Adams is about to get 90% of them back. And I think he's actually going to win a rebounding title. Yep, that's my prediction. Steven Adams will win the rebounding title. Question number 18. Does Clint Capella have any more room to grow? Listen, in a six-game series loss to the Warriors, Clint Capella's offensive production, or lack of production, / limitations, was exposed. Houston's defense was better when PJ Tucker was playing center, so that tells you a lot, okay? Because Clint Capella, he just wasn't producing on offense. Clint Capella's offense was literally James Harden driving pick and rolls and throwing him alley-oops. That's literally what all Clint Capella did. He stagnated the Houston offense. They couldn't run a lot of isolations because you practically would fly Clint. You had to take him to the line. He obviously wasn't a great free throw shooter. But now, the question is now with Russell Westbrook being there, is there going to give him any room for improvement? Is he going to get any better than he has already? So that's one of the questions we need to ask ourselves. And Clint, you need to ask yourself that too. Question number 17. Will Markelle Fultz do anything this year? He better, because Orlando has cleared the runway for him to play. DJ Augustine is practically due for a regression. He's already had a long career. He's at age 31. And at that age, you should be in your prime. You should have already won a couple games in the playoffs or done something magnificent in the playoffs. But DJ Augustine, he's reached his peak about 3-4 years ago. So he's probably going to decline. So that leaves room for Markelle Fultz. So what is he really going to do? We all know about his broken shot. We all know the lack of confidence he had when the Philadelphia 76ers drafted him. So what is he going to do? Those are one of the burning questions that stayed on my mind to wonder what is going to happen this upcoming NBA season. Question number 16. So we already went 20, 19, 18, 17. Question number 16. How many shots will Terry Rozier take? Some of you might wonder, why is that so important? Look, man, Terry Rozier spent his final season in Boston at a reduced role. He practically came off the bench. He didn't take many shots. They had him in reduced roles. And we all saw that infamous ESPN First Take interview that he had, where he practically just threw the entire organization on the bus, coaches, players, everybody. That was his way of shooting a shot to say, hey, man, get me out of Boston. And guess what happened? He left Boston, and then he joined a team that literally lost two and only two of their double-digit shot takers. And Kemba Walker, most notably Kemba Walker, and whose four other projected starters posted four of the 55 lowest usage rates among players who logged at least 20 minutes a game last year. So you practically do the math. Again, the question. How many shots will Terry Rozier take? And that's something for us to take note of. Question number 15. Is John Collins a center or power forward. The third-year Hawk big man quietly posted a 63% true shooting mark last year, hitting 70% of his shots at the rim and flashing the broad strokes of an effective three-point shooter. He did that at power forward, with 97% of his minutes coming alongside either Dwayne Dedmon or Alex Len. Look, man, the big men, they had enough shooting on the floor to space the floor. He was able to grab rebounds. Like I said, he was able to make his shots. So what is coaching going to do? What is going to happen? Are they going to play him at center? Are they going to play him at power forward? The Hawks have a nice young core, but their long-term title upside depends on Collins making the transition effectively into one of these positions. You can play both, but you need to be talented. If you're not Anthony Davis, if you're not one of these guys, you won't be able to do it effectively. So they need to make sure John Collins becomes either a power forward or a center. Question number 14. Are the Spurs serious about... Not the Spurs, rather. I'm sorry. Can the Spurs bench still dominate opposing second units? Again, can the Spurs bench still dominate opposing second units? That's a legitimate question I had. You know why? Because when LaMarcus Aldridge and DeMar DeRozan were together on the court, the Spurs outscored opponent by 44 points in 2,242 minutes with the both of them on the floor. But they only outscored opponent by 11 in 892 minutes with one of the two on the floor. But they outscored opponents plus 83 in 828 minutes with neither stars on the floor. That's just classic San Antonio Spurs. Classic Greg Popovich. So the question within the question. Can Greg Popovich's team continue to dominate the minutes other teams punt? Some of you are listening to these questions, you're wondering, man, why are these questions so sophisticated? Because this is something you think about, man, after watching tape. This is something I do. If you haven't already known after these past 52 other episodes, I talk a lot about watching film, something I enjoy doing in my free time. And I've seen a lot of San Antonio Spurs basketball where they practically win your games with their bench. And they've been doing that for the past 20 some odd years. So again, it wasn't necessarily a fluke, but this year we're probably going to find out if it is. Because a lot of things you can do them 1 year, but then the NBA copycat league, they make adjustments. So will you adjust, and will Greg Popovich and the Spurs adjust to the new upcoming adjustments for the NBA? Question number 12 that I had. How do the Nets find enough minutes for Kyrie Irving, Caris LeVert, Spencer Dinwiddie, and Joe Harris? Brooklyn had a lot of injuries, so they found themselves playing a lot of guard minutes last year. When one star wasn't on the floor, another star was injured. When they all were together, another one dominated. So the question is going to be, now that superstar Kyrie Irving is there, he's an obvious upgrade from D'Angelo Russell. But can coach Kenny Atkinson retain the same playing time dilemma this season? I don't think he can. How will he ensure that all four guards get enough game time and touches to be their better selves? That's something they did great last year. Coach was able to manage enough minutes so all of their guards were able to shine. One became an all-star, another one became, you know, he was on an all-defensive team, another one was on an all-NBA team. So now that Kyrie Irving is there, the reason why Kyrie Irving left, because he felt he wasn't used properly. He didn't felt part of the team. So that is one of the burning questions that I have. Are we going to find enough minutes to play these four guys and make sure they're happy and healthy, most likely? Question number 11. How did the Pacers score before Victor Oladipo returned? Indiana struggled to generate offense after Oladipo went down, mind you now. If you're not sure how he went down, he torn his quad last January. And that was with stand-in first option Bojan Bogdanović. I can't even pronounce his name. I think it's Bojan Bogdanović. Darren Collison and Thaddeus Young. These are the guys putting up the offensive production for Victor Oladipo. Before Victor Oladipo went down, I think he was averaging about close to 24 points a game and four or five assists a game. That's the production the Pacers had to make up. Now, the question within the question, if Malcolm Brogdon has more shot creation sauce like he did with the Milwaukee Bucks, a great signing for the Indiana Pacers, and they can combine Jeremy Lamb with TJ Warren, and they can make up for Victor Oladipo till he returns, then maybe they can possibly score. But I don't know. That's why I posted it as a question, because I'm not sure. Can they? I would assume they can. I would assume they will have that ridiculous run they had between January and April. But let's see what happens. That's something that's going to intrigue me. So now we reach to the pinnacle of this segment. Now I have the top 10 burning questions. And something that have been thinking about this entire offseason. Everybody's talking about the Los Angeles Clippers and the Los Angeles Lakers, that are going to dominate the entire NBA landscape. That's probably the NBA Finals matchup. And by the way, I think the NBA should take on the WNBA bracket system. Just let the best teams play each other, man. Forget this East and West business. You have enough money to do the travels. You can extend these games. You know, if you got to take days in between, just do them. But let's just get back to the question. Question number 10. Who's the biggest Clipper on the floor in crunch time? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I pause for a moment. Think about that. Who's going to be the biggest Clipper in crunch time? I mean, conventional wisdom would tell you should be Kawhi Leonard. I mean, most people consider him now the best player in the NBA. Absolutely the best two-way player in the NBA. So is he going to take the decisions? Is he going to take the shots in the final minutes? So you can put Kawhi Leonard and Paul George in with a permanent market. And then you take a pen, right? And then you put in Lou Williams. And then you could add Patrick Beverley to get you a great defensive stop in crunch time. So, I mean, it's looking pretty good. But wouldn't you want any of those guys protecting the rim or banging for tough rebounds? That means one player from the group is going to have to do the dirty work. Zubac, Montrezl Harrell. We know Montrezl Harrell is going to do his thing. Jermichael Green and Mo Harkless need to emerge as the fifth finisher. That's practically what the Clippers need to do again. But it's a question though: is it really going to be Kawhi, or is it really going to be Paul George? Because all these other guys, as great as they are, they probably can't fill in that spot. But during the course of the season, we'll find out. Question number 9: Can Trae Young actually defend? Can he really? I mean, this is just one statistic I'm going to mention to you guys, and you can do the math. With Trae Young on the floor, the Atlanta Hawks have allowed 115 points per 100 possessions. That literally cannot happen again. You're allowing 115 points with your best player on the floor? No, sir. That should be a warning for Trae Young. If you want to be considered in the great classes of the great all-time great point guards and shooting guards, whatever position you want to consider him to be, because nowadays we know how it goes. Point guard can play shooting guards can play point guard. If you want to be considered in that class, he needs to start playing defense. You cannot, no way, allow 115 points per 100 possessions with you being the best player on the court. Question number 8. What will Buddy Hield and Bogdan Bogdanovic do for an encore? We all know what they did in Sacramento last year. No one expected the Sacramento Kings to be remotely good. But now, Buddy Hield especially, the Bahamian native, shout out to his country, the Bahamas. We all know the tragedy they all been through. We know everything that they've passed through. So we send a prayer to them. And Buddy Hield now have some more means to help his country. He just signed a 4-year, $86 million extension. Nobody expected him to do anything last year. Nobody expected them to, you know, make screams and be loud. But this year, and just like any other player or any other team that makes noise when nobody expects him to, there's automatic expectation that comes in next year. So what is he really going to do, and what is his running mate Bogdan Bogdanovic going to do in order to propel the Sacramento Kings to make the playoffs since 2003? So that's burning question for us. Question number seven: is Denver's defense actually good? That's a very hot burning question for me, because I'm leaning to the side that Denver was actually lucky. And I have some proof for this, okay? Just hear me out for a bit. As Michael Pina noted, if you don't know who Michael Pina is, Michael Pina is a writer for SB Nation. Shout out to SB Nation for providing some of this information we're dealing with here today. SBNation.com, Michael Pina writer, and I'm going to read to you exactly what he pointed out here. Denver's opponent shot 33.4% on three-pointers last season, the best mark in the league, and a sharp contrast to the three bottom five finishes in years prior. In fact, Denver allowed more threes classified as wide open by NBA.com last year than they did in 2017-2018, but got away with it because teams shot just 31.9% of those. Tracking data is notoriously unreliable, and it's possible there's an intangible effect that Denver's more aggressive ball pressure put on shooters that were technically wide open and blah 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 blah. So the rest of that you can read on your own. I'll post a link to this on the Statman podcast website so you can read the notes for this. But practically the part that's really important here that you need to pay attention to this question is, as Michael Pina pointed out, we say numbers don't necessarily lie, but it all depends how you tend to look at it. That can give you a misguided outlook or overview of what actually happened. Like it pointed out here, Denver let 33.4% on three-pointers last season. That's what opponents shot against them. But opponents only made 31.9% of those shots they took. So if you're good at math, you can do the math. And they allowed more wide open threes. So that just lets you know that teams were just practically getting three-pointers the way they wanted to. They shot them the way they wanted to, and most of them were wide open. They just happened to miss them. So that number is kind of skewed. So Denver, were they really good on defense? Not necessarily. And why? And some of you might have answers to this. But for me, personally, I believe they just got lucky. Because in the NBA we live in now, the NBA we're looking at, not from when I grew up. The NBA when I grew up was just all defense. If a team made more than 10 three-pointers, it was like a career night for that team. Well, not really, but, you know, to make 10 threes back in the day was a lot. My point here is, the NBA we live in now, it's all about three-pointers. And if you can't defend a three-pointer, then practically you're not a great defensive team. Because if teams start to make three-pointers, then your pick-and-roll is going to be busted up. Your pick-and-roll defense, rather, will be busted up. And then you won't necessarily be a great defensive team. So this year, that's the burning question for us. How good is Denver really, and what are they really, really going to do on defense this season? Question number six. And I'm going to get to that because I wrote the gibberish note and I don't see where I have it here. Question number six. What is the effect of more load management on the rest of the roster in the NBA this season? The way I wrote this question on my notes was, you know, what is load management going to do to the rest of NBA rosters? We all saw what happened last year. Kawhi Leonard practically won the Toronto Raptors a championship because they pretty much rested him and he was available and he didn't lose composure nor balance. He wasn't tired during the final moments of NBA final games. And that's absolutely important. LeBron James has lost many championships doing this. Phil Jackson was known for taking Michael Jordan out when he didn't want to. He was known for resting Michael when Michael didn't want to. But at the end, you see what turned out. Michael was at his best at the end of the games. So what is the NBA going to do this season? Get ready for load management to be one of the buzzwords this season. It's practically going to be trending on Twitter, everywhere, Instagram, Facebook, everywhere. You're going to see load management. Matter of fact, you even start hearing it now at some jobs. People start talking about, man, I'm going to take some load management, man. I can't deal with this work. So we all know the NBA is a copycat league. And that's what they're probably going to do too. A lot of stars are going to be rested. A lot of players that need rest in crucial moments during the season are going to be rested. The NBA is probably not going to be happy about this because there are going to be fans that are going to pay money to come see these players. And one of those fans is me. I had big issues last couple years when load management wasn't even a thing. And players weren't even announced, or coaches weren't even announced that certain players weren't playing. And I would show up to the game and the player you want to see is not playing. So practically for me, it's kind of like, yo, man, I paid $180 for nothing. Yes, I came to see the team, but I wanted to see that particular player. So, again, the burning question is going to be, what and who is it going to affect this season? And how are coaches in the NBA are going to work this thing together so it doesn't affect the bottom line and especially the fans? Now we get to the part, the top five burning questions that the stat man has about the upcoming 19-20 NBA season. Question number five. How many one-legged threes will James Harden actually take? If you paid some remote attention to this past NBA preseason, you saw that James Harden has been doing this crazy, looks like a travel type. I can't even explain what kind of shot it is. It just looks like a great shot. And clearly James Harden has been working on it this past offseason. And it's something that James Harden has added to this arsenal. And I will tell you why it's a burning question to me and why I think he probably will make a lot of them. Because James Harden was so good with his step back, with his patented step back shot. It looked like a travel. Many times he did travel. I'd say 90% of the time he did travel. And even in the playoffs, you saw how teams were defending his left hand. Teams were practically standing behind James Harden's left hand, so they made him dribble with his right hand. But now, adding this one-legged three-point shot to his arsenal, James Harden practically solved a problem for himself. Teams now can't defend him the way they did last year. And that's what great players do. They adjust to defenses. They adjust to the league they're in. They adjust to the era they're in, and that's what makes them great. But the question is, how many of them is he really going to make? I would say he will probably make about 32% of them. I would say about 32% of them. Yes, that sounds practically high, but James Harden is one of a kind offensive player. And I have no doubt in his offensive abilities. And if he's comfortable enough, you got to think about this. He's comfortable enough to take these shots in NBA preseason games. What makes you think he won't take them in the regular season and make them consistently? So I think 31% is about the ceiling I'll give it. If he makes less than that, I won't be surprised because it's a really tough shot. But if he makes more, I'll be a lot surprised. But then again, it's James Harden, so who knows? But it's still a burning question and an interesting one for me and you listeners to pay attention to. Question number four. What kind of coach is Steve Kerr anyway? I'm sure a lot of us had that question for years now. Because even Steve Kerr admitted during an interview. He said, you know, he benefited from having a great base from Mark Jackson, building that team to where we have character and resolve with Draymond Green, Stephen Curry, Klay Thompson. Practically before Steve Kerr even got there, that team was pretty key. Practically just drafted from the ground up. And those guys, you know, they grew together practically. They built a team, and that's why they were able to win so many championships and made it to so many NBA finals. So to make this question a burning one, just think about this. Remember when Steve Kerr had that condition, he was away for about two, I think it was almost half a season, I believe. If I'm wrong, you can leave that in the comment section or wherever for the podcast, on the website or wherever on social media. But I think Steve Kerr was out for an extended period of time, and Luke Walton took over the coaching responsibilities, and the Warriors went 30-4. But then Luke Walton went to the Lakers, and we saw what type of coach Luke Walton really was. So the question legitimately is, what type of coach is Steve Kerr? He had an offensive juggernaut, one of the best of all time, at his disposal. I'm not saying that was the reason why he is a good coach, but you can also say because Steve Kerr is a good coach, that's why that team was able to perform the way they did. Because you have to push the right buttons. There have been so many quote-unquote death lineups and so many great all-star lineups that never really came to fruition. Prime example, my Laker team, 2004, Kobe Bryant, Gary Payton, Karl Malone, Shaquille O'Neal, Shaq and Kobe were in their prime. Malone and Payton were past their prime. I get it, but not because you put names together mean you're going to win. But that's one of the burning questions I have. This year, we were really going to see what type of coach Steve Kerr is going to be. And I'm quite intrigued for us to answer that question. Question number three. How would the Pelicans use Zion Williamson? You hear the word Zion? There's a buzz around it, man. Right now, Zion Williamson, buzz, electric, fans, loud, advertisement, marketing. That's what Zion is right now. But on the basketball court, how is he going to be used? The way it seemed like in the preseason, it looks like Zion Williamson is probably going to play power forward because of how he's built. I mean, just like LeBron James, just like Anthony Davis, we've seen a once-in-a-generational talent. This is who Zion Williamson is. If you look at him and you break him down, if you watch his game, if you watch at least 5 games of Zion, this is who he really is. He's a 6'6 dude, a 6'6 dude, rather. He weighs more than most centers. He jumps like prime Vince Carter. And, I mean, he has decent handles. He can break by a big man and just slam it on people. That's who he really is, man. Like, how are you going to really play this guy? How are you going to use him? But in the preseason, I've paid attention to some of these games and some of you have not. So this is my duty to inform you what I think is going to happen. I think early on in the season, we probably won't even see Zion for the first 8 weeks. Just like agent Wojnarowski reported as of this recording, October 21st, 2019, Zion Williamson will be out 6 to 8 weeks. So we probably won't see him for the first 2 months of the season. But most likely how it's going to be done is Jrue Holiday and Lonzo Ball will be doing all the playmaking. And Zion will be the guy just running off of pick and rolls, you know, getting his mid-range jumpers, getting some layups and some dunks when he come back. So the question is, obviously, the question within the question, how would they use Zion? But also, are they going to let Zion get his bread and butter now and then worry about improving his jumper later? Or will they want to do that all when he comes back? So that's the real burning question for me as to how they're going to use Zion Williamson. Now, the last two questions, man. Last two questions, something I had to really think about because I'm really, 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 really excited about these two questions. Question number two. What does a fully unleashed Steph Curry look like? Now, some of you might wonder, why is that so important? We already saw 2015, 2016 Steph Curry. But guess what? I'm now 34 years old. I just turned 34 last year. I just turned 34 last week, October 9th. 2 weeks ago, rather. And the last time I experienced something like the 2014-2015 Steph Curry season was the 1996 Chicago Bulls. Like, Michael Jordan literally dominated that season. The Chicago Bulls as a team dominated. And that's what the Golden State Warriors did too. They just literally dominated the entire NBA. And as we saw, they just dominated the NBA for 5 consecutive seasons practically. But since Kevin Durant came to the Golden State Warriors, Steph Curry had to really be put on ice. Meaning, that's how scary Golden State was. Kevin Durant, considered arguably the best NBA player, was playing along, you can say, practically two top 5 shooters of all time, with practically the top shooter of all time with Steph Curry. Steph Curry dropped 40 points in a preseason game against the Timberwolves this year. And that was just an early glimpse of what this Golden State team is going to be. Yes, Steph Curry is going to turn 32 this season. So it may be unrealistic for us to experience that 2015-2016 season again. But it just shows us that, hey, there is room for Steph Curry to go off. And he might actually just win the MVP. And that's going to be my prediction. I think Steph Curry is actually going to win the MVP for the Golden State Warriors. I know a lot of people are talking about Anthony Davis and his rejuvenation with the Lakers. But also, that leaves me within that question as well. It is something I didn't put on my list, but it's something I'm going to ask myself. Anthony Davis was not engaged the last 2 seasons in New Orleans. And we saw the ridiculous numbers Anthony Davis was posting. He was averaging 25, 14, like 3 blocks a game and a steal. And that was Anthony Davis not engaged. Anthony Davis not wanting to play for an organization. So, if... Just imagine what a unleashed Steph Curry is going to look like this year. Now that Kevin Durant is gone and now the offense is going to just flow through Steph Curry. And just imagine Anthony Davis playing with somebody he actually wants to play with LeBron James and the Lakers organization. So what is he going to look like? So that's just an interesting, ridiculous question that I pose to myself and I pose to you. Think about that. What are these guys going to look like? And I'm excited about that. And finally, A final question on my burning 20 questions for this NBA season. If you forwarded this podcast or you start listening to it now, you can go back and listen to the previous 19 questions, the previous 19 burning questions. So you can always go back and listen to it on the statmanpodcast.com or buzzsprout.com or Apple and iTunes. Question number one. The biggest burning question that I'm sure a lot of us still have, but my biggest burning question. I think I've answered this question 2 years ago, and everybody thinks I'm just being a hater or being crazy. But the question is this LeBron James league yet? Still, rather? Is it really? Does LeBron still own this league? I think this league was already taken over by Kevin Durant and Kawhi Leonard 2 years ago. People just have a hard time admitting that. They just don't want to let go of the thing. This reminds me of that Michael Jordan syndrome. We watched Michael Jordan for so long, dominate the NBA for a decade plus, and we couldn't let go of the fact that here came Kobe Bryant, here came Shaquille O'Neal, Allen Iverson, Tracy McGrady. We're just going to let go of it. And the same thing is happening now with LeBron James. LeBron James has been dominating the NBA since 2003 when he came in as a rookie. Now Kevin Durant's here, Kawhi Leonard's here, Giannis is here, Nikola Jokic is here. We have Dame Lillard, we have Paul George, we have all these superstars in the league, and we just don't want to let go of the greatness of LeBron James. But I'm here to give you facts. As great as LeBron James has done over the years to take care of his body, far the times never fails. So again, the question is this league really still going to be owned by LeBron James? We're going to find out this NBA season. But I must give you caution. 56,284 career minutes, including the playoffs and not the Olympics. Nearly 1,200 regular season games plus 239 playoff contests. 28,484 shots. Plus another 11,892 free throws. 10 finals appearances. Look, man, it's no knock on LeBron to suggest he has too much wear and tear to ascend back to his throne. But like I said, father time comes for all of us. But in the meantime, let us enjoy this 2019-2020 NBA season. And all the burning questions that we had, I hope they're all going to be answered. We've come to the end of another episode. This was episode number 53. Once again, if you stayed all the way to the end, man, I appreciate the support you've been showing the podcast. If you're here for the first time, if you've been here since day one, I know I sound like a broken record, but my mama taught me best. Every time, you gotta just give thanks to everybody that's been showing you support, man. So I'll do it from now till kingdom come. But again, before I let you guys go, you already know what the deal is, man. If you haven't subscribed already, just hit that subscribe button on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, TuneIn, whatever your favorite podcast platform can be, because we're all on there. And if you care about supporting the podcast as well, supporting our merchandise store, you can go to store.statmanpodcast.com. That's store.statmanpodcast.com. And finally, guys, of course, if you love reading, if you're at work and you prefer to just read rather than listen to the podcast because your boss might tell you you can't be listening to the Statman doing work hours, you can always go to statmanpodcast.com and just read the notes and read all the statistics I've used during this podcast and previous podcasts. That's it, guys. So for right now, Statman signing out, baby.
Thanks for listening to the Statman Sports Podcast. See you next time.